I would just add one little thought in connection to the manner of greatness. You know that whether it's in Luke 22 or whether it's in Matthew 18, the Lord never condemned the idea of greatness. Just checking. See if anybody's picking anything up to throw at me. He never condemns them for wanting to be great. What he corrects in them is their idea of what true greatness is. He has to adjust their thinking because they've bought into the society's thinking. They've been bought into the world's way of thinking of what greatness is. And so he adjusts their thinking. And in Matthew 18, he brings the child amongst them and say, you know, you have to come this way. It's a matter of pride. And he says, no, pride has no place in serving the Lord. And so he says there has to be humility of a child. And then the idea of prominence, no, in Luke 22, it's a matter of prominence. It's a matter of looking for that best place, the right hand or the left hand. And he says, no, he says true greatness is not looking for a place, but giving of yourself and serving. And it's right about then that the Lord Jesus gives that example in John 13 in the chronological order. It's right about then when they're arguing about who's going to be the greatest, that the greatest showed them humility and he showed them the true path of prominence is that you have to step low. You have to go low before you can be raised up. But never once did the Lord Jesus condemn the idea of greatness. Here's a statement for us to grab a hold of. You know, we have this idea that Christianity is, oh, I'm humble, you know. But that's not what the Lord teaches us. The Lord teaches us that we were created to be great. For who? For him. For his glory. For his honor. Not for ourselves. Not as the world thinks of greatness. But in a biblical definition of that greatness is that greatness puts God first. That's the true definition of greatness. So he doesn't condemn the idea of greatness, but he readjusts the attitude toward this whole concept of how do you become great. Becoming great is not about putting yourself forward. Becoming great is, and it's not thinking of yourself less either. A lot of times we think of humility as the sense of, well, you think lowly of yourself. That's just false humility. That's really not humility. That's false humility. I'm thinking low of myself. I remember two brothers trying to get through a door. And one of them says, you go first. No, you go first. No, you go first. I pushed them both out of the way and I said, I'm going to go. Because both of them were trying to be humble, but they really weren't being humble. They were actually arguing over who's going to be most humble. That's not humility. That's false humility. And so the Lord is really calling us with these disciplines that we're going to be looking at. He's really calling us to be real before him. And that's why these things are so important.
So on Tuesday, how to get the most out of your time in the Word. Wednesday, prayer is more than asking. It's all about communion. Thursday, it's being responsible for what has been put into our hands and seeking opportunities to serve not only our brethren, but our neighbors to make a real impact in the world in which we live and move. We can get huddle mentality at times. And huddle mentality means that we're only concerned about our own comfort group, our own group in which we move, in circles in which we move. But the Lord calls us really to, in love, serve as much as lies within you, do good to all, and then especially those of the household of faith. So we want to keep that in mind. The last day that we want to look at, and on Friday, is this idea of worship. And I mentioned also, just when I was listing the things, that very often worship, we connect it with the breaking of bread and coming together to remember the Lord. In fact, sometimes we use the language, it's the worship meeting. You know why I do that? because it's not really a biblical phrase. You know, it's something that we sort of adapted and sort of just go along with. We come together to break bread. And, you know, because of who we're remembering, something is invoked and we respond with praise, with thanksgiving, and with worship. But it's very interesting when the Lord Jesus Christ gives in some instruction in John chapter 4, and we'll look at it in detail. He recognizes and he instructs his disciples to realize that worship is so much more than a place or a location. So if you're thinking that worship is simply when we come together, then you've only have a very myopic, a very small view of the scope of worship. Worship encompasses our whole being. Worship is the idea that I am responding momentarily to the God who has made himself known to me. It's a lifestyle. When I wake up in the morning, it's not, oh, good Lord, it's morning. When I wake up in the morning, it's, good morning, Lord. I wake up with the Lord on my mind. I'm responding to how he has revealed himself, and that's how all of these other things work together. He has revealed himself in the scriptures. I'm into communion with him through prayer. He reminds me of what he has entrusted into me, into his care, that he has prepared me to serve. I am now responding to him as a lifestyle choice every day. And so worship now takes on a whole different character. And what happens is when I'm living that way every day, when we come together, man, the roof is just going to go blowing off the place, because if imagine everyone living that way, responsive to how God has revealed himself 6 days, 7 days out of the week. And then we have the opportunity to be together and we're all together. That has great potential. But very often what happens is I don't live in an attitude of worship every day. It was Moses who had been called by God to serve, to lead his people out of Egypt. And I'm thinking in Exodus 34. Mm-hmm. And something happened in Moses. He had been, you know, he had great experience. He saw the bush that was burning and not being consumed. He heard the voice of God calling him, saying, go to Pharaoh and deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. He witnessed the power of God in all of the plagues that came upon Egypt. But what was the thing that really captured Moses? He said, God, I want to see your glory. I want to see who you are. I want to be absorbed with who you are. And in Exodus 34, we have this whole exchange, and God meets Moses at that point, and he reveals himself, and he proclaims himself as he would pass by Moses. And you know what Moses' response was? He said, Moses went down and worshiped. The awe of who God is needs to capture my imagination every day. It needs to capture my thought process every day so that I am now living in an attitude of responsiveness to who God is. I walk through life, and do I see it as what God has sprinkled around me, what he has done in his amazing creatorial power? Do I even have the opportunity to stop and to consider it? Some of the greatest expressions of worship in the book of Psalms is because the psalmist took the time to just behold the handiwork of God. So I need to behold the handiwork of God to see how he has done his marvelous work in creation, even with the fall and things being as bad as they are. But to see his wisdom, to see his pattern, to see his power, That then becomes my occupation all the days. And I live now in this atmosphere, this attitude of worship. And so what happens when we come together, it's just going to be a crowning culmination of what we're all doing individually. Just want to close with a couple points, unless you have...
Yeah.
Go.